Please help me offer a warm welcome to Jen K. from Visalia.
Okay. I am not looking forward to this. I'm just like cursing Bill in so many different ways right now. But I think we've all done that. So I'm in good company. My name's Jen. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date. See, it does feel good. Thank you. My sobriety date is 12/17/19. And I meant to set a timer for myself. Let me just grab my phone real quick. Okay. So I never drank normally, like a lot of folks that I've heard talk in the rooms. My drinking started a little bit later just because of availability. I lived in a dry town, and then I lived in a town that I didn't really understand how to get alcohol because I moved to Philadelphia and I didn't understand that it was only in bars and laziness. So I finally moved back to California, and it was back in the grocery stores. And I just never could just have one. And I didn't understand why I couldn't have one. And then I went through the thinking of if I just had the right one, then I'd have the one that would stop it. And if I could just figure it out and all that rationale. And it never worked to figure it out. I don't know. It just was, I spent so much time stuck in it, stuck in that process of how can I drink? How can I drink just right? And then eventually it just didn't work anymore. And the drinking became my prison. I did this painting when I became sober, and it was a woman in a bottle, and that's how I felt. I just felt drowned by it. It was drowning me from the inside out. And, you know, it was all fun and games when I'd start. I was really fun. I'd start talking and opening up and sharing with people, and then I was in bed, and I couldn't get out of bed, and then I couldn't take my kids where I was supposed to take them. And my kids, who were used to getting picked up on time to everything, were the ones sitting outside of the school wondering where their mom was. And I was drunk. I was too drunk to get there. Then I had something called a gastric bypass surgery. If you ever are not sure if you have a drinking problem, don't get that surgery. I went from, it was just like, what it does to your body is you metabolize the alcohol really, really, really fast. And so you're drunk super, super fast, and then you can sleep it off, like, in an hour, and then you get drunk again. So it's like you become a really good alcoholic. You're good at your job. And I got so good at it that I started to get ulcers and didn't know. And I had an ulcer perforate, and which that means that a little hole happened in my stomach, and all my gastric juices started leaking out, and I needed emergency surgery in the middle of the night. I remember calling the doctor and saying, something's wrong. And he said, well, what'd you eat tonight? I said, well, I don't want to tell you. And he goes, why? And I go, well, because I had a beer and peanuts. And that's all I'd eaten that day was, we were out of all the alcohol because, I don't know, we ran out. Somebody drank it. And then I had, oops. And I didn't even like beer. And I had beer and peanuts. And kind of funny that's what I went out on. But so then I had to have this emergency surgery. And I still came home and drank, figured out how to hide it really, really well for a while. But I made a tricky little bet with God, and I didn't know I was doing it at the time because I didn't really believe in God, but just said, all right, if there's something out there, if I heal from this and don't take like all those expensive medications I'm on, and I kind of did, but not really, and I still drink, and I'm better, then all right, fine, I'll get some sort of treatment. And so fast forward, I go into an office, and I healed. My stomach somehow, despite all of what I was putting my body through, healed. And I was like, shit. And so we wasn't planning on that. I was planning on going home and having a drink. And so I looked at this flyer for a recovery center, and I was like, oh, fine. So I called it and went in, proceeded to tell her I couldn't come because I had a vacation planned and I needed to wait a little bit. And she was like, yeah, you have to come in now. I'm like, really, this does not work for me. It's December. I still get sober in December. Like, I've got parties to plan. And And I still don't really think I have a problem. That was the comical part, is I really didn't think I had a problem. Like, I was like, I just need you to tell me how to drink, not, like, to stop. Like, I'm not one of those alcoholics. And so I go in, and at that point, my nutrition, like, my whole body was just shutting down. And I went to the group, and I cried. Probably for a good month straight. I mean, I couldn't even talk in the meetings. I'd be like, and like I'd make people uncomfortable. I couldn't get out words except for I was crying. Which for me, I never cry. I just can't. I actually have like a thing where tears don't come. I'll feel the need to cry and I can't feel it. So what happened to me was now I know, looking back, or I believe was that was my first step. It took 30 years It took 30 years of me admitting that I had a problem, to managing it through location and sheer availability, to almost giving away everything in my life to have a drink. And so I admitted I may have a problem. So I started, well, maybe I have a problem. But let's all talk about your problems in the room, because you all are messed up. And they loved me there. And So I stayed there for a while and went through AA, went in the rooms, and really just, the only things I did really right at the beginning of my sobriety was I didn't drink, and I found a sponsor who had a lot more time than me. And not just time, good time. She told me to slow down. She took me through the book, and I'd come back. Like, I'm kind of a nerd. So I thought, okay, I did all my step work. Look what I did. Step 12, are we there yet? No. And I'm like, oh, what do you mean step 4? You said it's going to take how long? I was like, oh, but this is me. I'm not going to take that long. Don't worry. I don't resent anybody. I love everybody. And I didn't love everybody. And they didn't love me. Who would have thought it? But, oh, the power of taking the time to go through that and to really look at those relationships in my life and to heal relationships that I never thought I would heal. I never thought my life could be like what it's like today. I was in sales, and I used to put people into jobs and temporary staffing in Philadelphia. I did that for 12 years. It was a high-paced, high, fast environment, all about the car you drove and the clothes you wore. People made a lot of money. I hated my job every day. I felt unethical what I was doing. It tore at me inside to do the job. And today I am back in school. I'm in my master's program to be a high school counselor. I got my first midterm back, and I did really well, so that was good, because that was I was really nervous, obviously, speaking. But I get to finally do what doesn't make the most money, what isn't the most prestigious of jobs, but it's exactly what I'm supposed to do. And it's not by my standard of what I'm supposed to do. It's my higher power standard of what I'm supposed to do. I've always known I'm supposed to work with youth. I've always known I'm supposed to work with kids. They make me, they're funny. I never thought it'd be high school kids. Those are the scary ones. But, God, they're funny. And they'll tell you what they think. But that's when you can still get them, and it's an honor to work with high school students. And my relationships in my life have completely changed. My family knows that when I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. My children are not the last ones left in school unless I've strategically planned it that way, which sometimes I do, because they need to sit there a little bit. My daughter's not listening, they know their mom's there. They know that they can be mad at me, that they have every right to be angry at me for what happened, that it was not their fault. And they know how to get help if they ever need it in their lives, if this is something that they get stricken with as well. So the biggest thing I can say is I'm just dipping my toe into the water of sobriety. I'm just getting to know you all. I appreciate the open arms. I was at my lowest of lows when I walked in this room. You could barely scrape me up. I felt like a piece of dog poop being scraped up by a shovel. But I had women hugging me. And I had to explain I don't hug. But I do now. That didn't go over well. But I've seen what true love is. I've seen people love you for exactly who you are. I feel like an honest, open member of my community. And I'm just so freaking grateful. That's the thing. That's the message I have. I never thought that this is what it could be, that you could, you know, I have, I can't look at her right now, but I have my sponsor who I love her. I didn't know that moms could love you like that. And just love you for exactly who you are. And I give her dirty looks, and I roll my eyes at her all the time. She's really wrong. But it's a beautiful program. And when they, oh, God, all the crap they said, stay and wait till the miracle happens. Stay, because it'll happen. And you'll be sitting here telling other people, and I can sit down and not have to talk. But it really is an honor. Phil, I don't know what you see in me to talk. Thank you. I'm grateful to give my message, and I hope it helps some of you stay sober today.
All right, again. Awesome. All right, listen, if you've got a court card, you can pick it up after the speaker's done. It'll be over here on this table. And now, guys, listen, it's my privilege to introduce tonight's main speaker. So please help me give a warm Tulare County welcome to our speaker tonight, Pat O. of Fullerton, California.
Good evening. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. I love you guys, too. Thank you. It's always good when the young people are here, and the old people are like, not allowed to have any fun here. You know what I mean? And I love young people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to screw your thing up. You want to take it? Because you know, this is like annoying. My ADD is like going crazy. You know what I mean? What was I saying? I forgot. Oh, yeah, I love young people. Well, let's just start over. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. I love it. You got it, right? I don't know about you, but I need a lot of love. You know what I'm saying? And when I don't feel loved, I'm like suicidal. You know what I mean? And so thanks, young people. You know, I don't feel so. Anyways, and I love young people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love WIPA. There's also a thing called OLDIPA. So if you're wondering if I can't go to WIPA or not, there is OLDIPA. And you're welcome there. I love to hear that. I'll tell you the one of the highlights of my sobriety. I was the chair for ACCUPA in Orange County in 2009. There was 3,500 people in this auditorium. I was the chair, and so I was leading the main meeting on Saturday night, and all the readers went, and everyone went, and I was able to introduce my mom, who was the main speaker at that meeting, man, it was powerful. And you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I just, out of curiosity, how many people here have 30 days or less? Can you raise your hand? I want to welcome you guys to Alcoholics Anonymous. I woke up this morning and I said, God, please, if you see fit, put at least one person in my life that I can help today. You know, and I was driving here from Orange County, you know, just asking God to open my heart. You know, open my heart to remove any fear and any insecurity that I have so that I can carry a message that God wants me to carry tonight. You know, it's not about me today, it's about you. And then I get here, right, and then I'm so self-obsessed, and I'm thinking, what am I going to talk about, you know, and they're going to judge me, and oh, poor Bill, he invited me, and he's going to hate it, you know, and all this, wah, wah, wah. You know, I look like I got to go pray, and someone's like, oh, God's already here, you know, oh, yeah. You know, I don't know about you, I'm a doubter. There's a whole chapter in the book called We Agnostic, right? I'm like, yeah, maybe for you. God loves you, but not me. You know what I mean? And, so I got to go outside and pray. And I get like four or five words in. I hear that guy's voice go, God's already here. I'm like, I don't want to hear that guy's voice. So I try to pray, you know, and I hear your voice again. Thank you, you know, that God's already here. And I'm so grateful for the old timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank you for continuing to show up to Alcoholics Anonymous and pave a path for a guy like me. You're an example that I need to keep showing up, you know what I mean? Like, I remember my mom died at 44 years sober, and she was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, my mom had an oxygen tank the last 3 years of her life, and me and her traveled all over the country and spoke together, you know what I mean? My mom was at 5 meetings a week. My mom was reading the big book with women at Starbucks every night of the week with an oxygen tank, you know what I mean? And here I am going, I don't want to go to the meeting, and I think about my mom, and I'm like, no excuse, you know what I mean? And so thank you for continuing to show up, you know. Thank you for continuing to be here. And if you're new, my sobriety date is October 23rd, 2002. I have a sponsor. His name's Mike. He's at Mike S. out of Riverside. He's a beautiful man. He knows everything about me. Thank God, you know what I'm saying, because I'm, you know what I mean? He understands my thinking, you know. And there's a line in the 12 and 12 in the fourth step that says, Our real problem is our inability to form a true bond with another human being. You know, I mean, that's not much hope if you're new. But he understands the awkwardness in me. You know what I mean? Like, I was talking to some friends tonight. It's like, we're a bunch of awkward birds here. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, you know, and he gets the way I think, you know, and he gets the separation. The main problem the alcoholic centers in the mind, right? And my mind is instantly separating me from you that fast. I walk in the room and I'm like, yeah, I'm not like these people. They're not like me. They haven't been where I've been. They haven't done what I've done. They haven't seen what I've seen. No one likes you here. You're a loser. You're a failure. Just get back in the car and go home. You know, alcoholism wants to separate me from you. And I had no idea what alcoholism was when I got here. You know, I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I'm like, you know, they're like, are there any newcomers? And I'm like, yep, I'm a newcomer. And they're like, oh, and they point to me. And I'm like, my name is Pat, and I'm an addict. Oh, not an AA, you know what I mean? All the old guys are like, there's an addict in our room. Let's get him out of here, you know what I mean? And I'm like this. You know what I mean? Flip you guys off, and I go outside, and I slam the door for effect, because I want you to know how pissed off I am. You know? And no one ever follows the angry guy out of the room. Hey, angry guy, you know, here's a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why don't you take this home or to your bush or wherever you're living, you know, and read it. Maybe you might identify with alcoholism, right? And I leave, and I go out there, and I die. You know, and I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous not knowing what alcoholism is. Right, I'm new. How am I supposed to understand what alcoholism is? I come to AA and they go, you know, the people talk and they're like, oh, my name's Sally and I'm an alcoholic and I put booze down and my life got great. You know, I'm like, not my experience. Right? Dude's like, my name's Fred, I'm an alcoholic and I became the bank president. You know what I mean? I'm like, not me. Right? I take alcohol away from my life and everything gets worse. Right? I don't know. You're an alcoholic and life gets good for you. That's not what I got. Right? So I must be something different. And so I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't identify because I don't want the judgment from the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. We got a different fellowship for you. I don't even know if I'm alcoholic. Do I belong yet? And I go out there and I die. And I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous and I raise my hand. And I say, my name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And then they, oh, put $2 in the basket. Ha, 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 you know. Some are sicker than others. Oh, that's a real welcoming comment. You know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, we think it's funny with our 10, 15, 20 years, but I go out there and I die. And no one ever follows me out of the room and says, hey, angry kid, you want to go get pie? I'm going to tell you my story. You know what I mean? No one ever followed me out. And I go out there and I die. And if you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care what you are, what brought you here, what you're here. I'm here to explain, tell you what it was like for me, what happened, what I'm like today as a result to alcoholism. I know today that I'm an alcoholic. Because I had a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who understood the responsibility statement here that says when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I'm responsible. And my responsibility tonight is to show up to Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about my alcoholism in hopes that if you're new, your alcoholism wakes up. In hopes that you say, I understand what that guy is talking about. He understands the way I feel on the inside. He may have a message that I can hear, right, that touches me. And I just might come back to Alcoholics Anonymous tomorrow. And, you know, and I'm grateful that the guy that came and picked me up was armed with facts about himself, understood the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and laid it out in a way that I could identify. Because the greatest gift that you guys gave me is the gift of identification around here. Because it's my experience that when I accepted to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, I came all the way in and I sat all the way down. And when you said, hey, I need a greeter, I said, what can I do? And you said, I need someone to clean up, I said, I'm your guy. Because there was no other solution in my life than what you guys had to offer. You know, and I have a home group, and my home group's the South Coast Speakers Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on a Wednesday night at 7:30 in Laguna Beach, and there's 250 people in my speaker meeting, and it's not mine, but it's my home group, and I make it mine. And, you know, I remember I was complaining about my home group, and my sponsor said, well, do you have a commitment? And I said, well, no. He said, then you're a taker. He said, why don't you go back to your home group and get a commitment? And I went back, and I got a commitment, and I love my home group because I'm in the middle of my home group. And, you know, and I'll never forget a man by the name of John Ackerland who met me at the meeting. And John Ackerland had 46 years sober at the time. He had a thick accent. And I'll never forget the softness of that man's hand. He put his hand out to me and he said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, kid. And he brought me into the room and he took me to the back where the coffee is back there, right? And he gave me a styrofoam cup with half a cup of coffee, which I thought, man, you're kind of selfish, dude. Can't fill it all the way up, you know? And, you know, he understood. You know, I was like shaking, you know. He didn't want the coffee everywhere, you know. And then he gave me a half a donut, which I thought was kind of selfish, too. You get a whole one, you know. And then it was stale. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my God, yeah. I ain't grateful for a single thing. You know what I'm saying? I'm like thinking these guys are selfish. And he said, come with me, kid. And he took me all the way into the second row. Right, 250 people, you know what I'm saying? The second row. And he put me in the middle of all these old guys. You know, Lynn Wilder had 40-something years. Johnny Crean had 50 years at the time. Frank O'Rourke had 50 years, right? I'm like in the middle of these old guys, you know what I mean? And they're like telling their story. Oh, I drank on the warship, you know, 1912, you know what I mean? I'm like, but they're laughing at their stories, man. They love their stories, man. I love sitting, I'm so grateful to be back in AA. If you're new, just get in the car, right? Those guys would go, just get in the car. And we would go for 3 hours. I'd listen to these guys talk for 3 hours, tell their stories, for a 45-minute talk from the same guy that was telling the stories, tell some more stories, and get back in the car for 3 more hours, right? But I'll never forget the unconditional love that I was given by those old-timers. And I sat there and I vibrated, you know what I mean? Like, I got the nervous disposition the big book talks about. You know that bouncy leg syndrome? You know what I'm saying? I can feel it tonight, you know? I bite my nails. I still bite my nails, you know. I just got that angst on the inside, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just vibrating, and the meeting starts, and John puts his hand on my leg, and he says, don't forget to breathe, kid. Oh, yeah. And kind of like Bill did to me, he took me outside. He's like, let's get present, you know. And, and the speaker goes, and I got ADD, you know what I mean? And my sponsor says it's self-centeredness, but I think it's ADD. And this cute girl goes walking across, and I'm like, bing! You know what I mean? I get, like, I think I have something that she wants, you know? And I, like, get up to go follow her, you know, flopping around like a noodle, you know what I'm saying? And he grabs my hand, he sits me down, and he goes, we don't get up during the meeting. It's disrespectful. I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom. He said, you go before and you go after, but it's disrespectful to get up during the meeting. And then after the meeting, he goes, go thank the speaker. I said, I don't even like the speaker. Why am I going to go thank him? You know what I'm saying? And he said, well, he drove all the way from Los Angeles. It took him 2.5 hours in traffic. Why don't you go thank him for driving 2.5 hours? So I stand in the greeting line. It felt like 2 hours. It was probably like 3 minutes, but it seemed like 2 hours. All I'm thinking about me, can't believe I got to do this. Yeah. Thanks for driving from L.A. So I drove from Orange County, so I expect all of you in line after the meeting. And But the next meeting, I show up, and John welcomes me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he brings me to the second row, and I tell all the stories, and I sit down. Now, I'm a people pleaser. I don't know if you guys are people pleasers, but I want you to like me so bad, you know what I mean? And I wanted that old guy to like me, you know what I mean? So now I'm going to behave in the meeting. And the leader comes up to me, and she goes, would you like to read the 12 traditions? And John goes, he's not reading the 12 traditions. And my one feeling was hurt, you know what I mean? And I mean, I didn't even want to read anyways, but my feeling was hurt, you know what I mean? And he looks at me and he goes, kid, he's like, you're not dressed appropriately to be behind the podium. He said, I want you to show up next week with a collared shirt in case you're asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went home that night. And thank God for Salvation Army. You know what I mean? I was at Salvation Army. I got my little collared shirt, and I showed up because I wanted John to like me, not because I wanted to be a respectful member of AA. You know what I mean? And he said, you look good, kid. Thanks for respecting Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the leader didn't even ask me that week, and I caught another resentment. You know what I'm saying? And but I was having a hard time sleeping. If you're new and you're having a hard time sleeping, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard these people outside smoking. They're like, yeah, my sponsor told me that if I read the big book at night, I'd fall asleep because it was boring, you know what I mean? So I'm a smart aleck, you know what I mean? So I go up to John. I'm like, yeah, John, I'm having a hard time sleeping. He's like, oh, perfect. Come with me, kid. And he took me over to the literature table where the literature was, and he gave me a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. He's like, this will really put you to sleep, kid. And I was like, what about the big book, you know? And he's like, no, you need to read the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, why? I don't care, really. He said, you need to learn about the history and understand the process of what's come from nothing to where you stand today so that you can respect the thing that's going to save your life. And I'm so grateful for that message that guy gave me, you know? Because I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll respect Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have some, I won't go there anyways, but I love AA. I truly, truly love Alcoholics Anonymous. John told me, he said, anytime you're asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, just say yes. I said, why? He said, because that's where God wants you to be. And I don't know why God wants me to be here tonight, but when Bill asked, I said yes. And for whatever reason, God has me here tonight, you know. And so thank you for the opportunity. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I love your fellowship. You guys have been so welcoming and so open. And I appreciate, you know, all of it. And, you know, I don't know, I'll get off the soapbox. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 11 months old. I love the kids in Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard one screaming. I'm like, yeah, it's my peeps. You know what I mean? I act that way today, just not as much, you know, and it's a temper tantrum. And you know what I mean? But thanks for bringing the kids to Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom came to AA. My mom was a blackout drinker, which means I'll never know who my dad is. You know what I mean? I mean, for all I know, my dad could be the cable guy. It's like, bow, chicka, bow, now, you know. And, I mean, she didn't even know she was pregnant until she was in labor, which is, you know, quite interesting. You know, she thought she was constipated, so she called 911, you know. And right, and if you're laughing, you identify with that thinking for sure, you know what I mean? And she thought she was constipated, so she called 911, and the paramedics came, and she came out of a blackout, and the paramedic was holding me in her apartment and said, you need to name him. My mom's name is Patty, so she named me Patrick so she wouldn't forget my name. You know what I mean? And, you know, my mom, before she died, she every time I'd speak, she'd send me a text, and she'd say, make sure you tell him the truth. I miss my mom so much, I wait for that text. I sat there and looked at my phone about 10 times waiting for that text, you know. And the truth is, Mom, I'm supposed to be a turd, you know. And the greatest thing Alcoholics Anonymous has taken me from turd to human, you know what I mean? And, you know, but my mom was being sentenced to prison for 10 years ago to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and in the middle of the sentencing, you know, the judge is like, 10 years in prison or AA. And my mom sat there that day and she thought about it. 10 years in prison or AA? 10 years in prison or AA, right? And the attorney's like, probably should go to AA, you know. And the attorney said, she'll go to AA, you know. And so they granted her Alcoholics Anonymous. And my mom brought me hey, how's it going? The first 11 months of my life, I sat in a bar and on a pool table and a, you know, thing to carry kids in a smoke-filled bar. And at 11 months old, my mom brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't say, hey, this is a closed meeting and kids aren't welcome here. Because my mom would have never had an opportunity to recover. The women in Alcoholics Anonymous met my mom at the door, and the women took me I've loved the women my whole life in AA, you know. You know what I mean? Y'all had coloring books for me. You brought me the Rice Krispie treats. You know what I mean? And I just was outside playing. You know what I mean? And the women in AA raised me. You know? And I'm forever grateful for you guys. You know? And, you know, I came to AA every day of my life. I could recite chapter 5 when I was a kid. I could recite the 12 traditions. At the end of the meeting, I held hands. I was like, keep coming back. You know? You know, the old timers told me, we're saving this seat right here for you, kid. You know, I had no clue what that meant. You know, now I do. There's my seat, you know, and they knew, you know. But we would ding dong ditch. We'd go to the same Tuesday night gong show. I remember all the meetings. It was a Tuesday night gong show. It was in Dana Point. We'd ding dong ditch the neighborhood every night, me and my little friends from AA, you know. And we'd hit the same door every week, you know, because he would chase after us, and we'd be like, you know. And we'd run in the middle of the meeting, and we'd hide amongst you guys, and the guy would come in the back door. He's like, where are them damn kids? And you guys in AA were like, there's no kids here, you know. And y'all taught us how to lie and con and manipulate, you know. And, you know, after the meeting, there wasn't treatment centers, you know. The women in AA would get the newest newcomer, and they'd get a group of the newcomers, and they'd take them to Denny's. And I know this because every night I fell asleep in Denny's in the booth. And they'd get the newcomer, and they'd put her in the middle of the booth, and they'd surround her, and they'd smoke cigarettes, and they'd drink coffee, and they'd talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would pass out, and at 2:15 in the morning, we would head home. And they let the newcomer go at 2:15 after the bars closed, you know. And one night my mom brought a woman home. Sometimes they would detox on her couch. I knew what alcoholism did. I watched a woman die of this disease in my living room, you know. If knowledge had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd never taken my first drink. If love had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd never taken my first drink. The love that I felt when I came in here, the love that when Bill picked me up and we sat at lunch and you guys were cooking and you guys were welcoming me and I came here and all of the welcomes and all just the thank you for being here and all that is the love that I can feel it right now. But I have a disease of perception. If you're new, right, alcoholism is a disease of perception. Right? I sat outside my window in my mom's apartment and I would look outside the window and wonder if my dad was ever coming home. And I'd watch the car come down the street. The lights on the car would come down the street and they would make a right and they wouldn't turn into my house. And as a little boy, I remember telling myself, if my dad doesn't want me, then there is no God. You know, and I'm a bedwetter. I don't know if there's any other bedwetters, pre-alcohol. Do my peeps. I mean, we're not admitting that, you know what I'm saying? And you know what I mean? I don't know if you're a bedwetter, you'll get it, but there's no, you get one invite to a sleepover, you know what I mean? And I get the invite to the sleepover, and I'm like, don't go to sleep, don't go to sleep. Everyone falls asleep, but I'm like, don't go to sleep, don't go to sleep. And I fall asleep, and I wake up, it's warm and wet, and I'm like, oh. And I flip the cushion over, you know what I mean? Hopefully they never find out, you know. And no more sleepovers, you know what I mean? But there's a lot of shame, right? There's a lot of shame attached to a bedwetter. You know what I mean? And I'm terrified. The best way to describe myself as a kid is like, I'm the little kid in elementary school that smells like poopy pants and syrup. You know what I mean? I'm just like awkward and weird. My hair's like, you know? And I'm just awkward. You know, I'm that way naturally. I walk in the room tonight, right? Like, the program Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to live life, you know what I mean? But back then, I had no tools, right? This was like, you know, I'm a right fielder on the baseball team, and they're right fielders. No one's going to admit it. Good looking out. My peeps, you know what I mean? It's not the, like, winning position. You know? I'm in right field, resentful at the pitcher, you know what I mean? He's usually the coach's son, you know what I'm saying? I'm a bastard, you know what I'm saying? I have ADD. I'm looking for the long dandelion. You know. I'm in left field. You know what I mean? Wandering around. The coach is yelling at me. He's like, the other side of the field, kid. I'm like, oh, there's a game going on? You know, one time I was on second base. I don't even know how I got there. I was absolutely terrified. I'm the kid that always strikes out. You don't want, like, you know, ninth inning, bases loaded. Pats up, you know what I mean? And I'm up one more time, and I strike out. Keep your eye on the ball, kid. I strike out, and I don't know what happened, but this time I was on second base. I was like, how the heck did I get here? You know what I mean? I didn't know if I had the right cleats on. Did I wear the belt? Did I have the right socks on? I'm so self-obsessed as a little kid long before I ever took my first drink. I didn't even know what was going on, if I had the right jersey on. All of a sudden, the kid cracked a line drive and I ran back to first base. Dude, it was like a triple play in the wrong direction. You know what I'm saying? Do little poopy dance back to the dugout. You know, and all my friends are running out of the dugout that day. And what I heard him say is, you're a failure, you're a loser, and you're no good. I had no idea where those thoughts came from, but that was the voice in my head long before I ever took my first drink. I was raised with a lot of love. Nobody was saying those things to me. Right? Main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind, and that's what's going on that day. And none of them said that. And I remember looking at my mom, and she's standing in the stands clapping. I mean, so proud of her boy. And not proud because I had a triple play in the wrong direction. My mom was proud that I got out of that car. Go play that stupid game one more time. And my mom was proud I had enough courage to get out of the car. And if you're new, you're sitting here like, I just can't stop drinking. What's this have anything to do with alcoholism? It has absolutely everything to do with alcoholism. Because I can tell you the effect that alcohol has on this alcoholic body, man, is the most powerful thing that ever happened to me in my life. At 9 years old, I took my first drink of alcohol. I was at an AA meeting of all places. Saturday night speaker meeting in Laguna Beach at the hospital. I remember like it was yesterday. And we used to always mess with this guy. I know now he's a chronic relapser because he stood outside the meeting. He had a trench coat on. He had an eye patch. He smoked cigarettes and he was pissed. You know what I mean? And we'd throw little pebbles at him and he'd chase after us. You know what I mean? And we'd mess with him. You know, he was angry. One time he got this little piece of wood and he put these nails in there. He goes, come with me, kids. And he went to the old timer. He goes, watch the old. We're going to put it behind the old timer and see how much serenity they have now. You know, he put it behind their car tire, you know, and, there are a lot of characters around alcoholics. Now, I mean, look at the guy next to you. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And I love growing up here. It's so much fun, you know. But one time I messed with him, and he went to go grab me, and I kicked him in the shin like I always did, and I ran outside the hospital. We ran out the front door, and I was 9. These kids were like 14 years old, and we ran up the parking structure between the 3rd and the 4th story that day, and those kids pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And I didn't know what alcohol was going to do to me or for me, but I knew that if I didn't drink it that day, those kids weren't going to like me. Right? And the bottle came to me, and I took a pull off that bottle, and I hated the taste of tequila. It was disgusting. It burned. I was like, spit it out. And I was overcome with fear. And what that fear told me was that I wasn't going to be like the rest of my life. The bottle went back around. The second time I got that bottle of tequila, I was excited about having it. And I wasn't excited about getting drunk. I was excited about having some friends. I took a pull off that bottle of tequila that day, and I talked myself into holding that tequila down. And I can tell you the exact effect that alcohol has on this alcoholic body was all that fear went away. In that moment, I felt like I connected to those kids. In that moment, I felt a part of, right? And that's what alcohol did for me, was it connected me to you. I couldn't get booze at mom's. I mean, she went to AA. You know what I'm saying? It was hard to get booze at mom's. I couldn't go to 7-Eleven and pimp any beer at 9. You know, that's weird, you know? 11 years old, this kid handed me a joint. I wasn't like, hey, going to AA, you know what I mean? Can't smoke weed, gotta be a purist, you know what I mean? I was like, you know what I mean? I hit that joint, man, and all of a sudden this little elf chased me around the park, you know what I mean? I hallucinated for like, I don't know, 2.5 hours. I was like, argh, you know what I mean? And man, I had the time of my life. I never had as much fun in my entire life that I had that moment. And what happened for me was it connected me to a new group of friends. The time I was in high school, and I grew up in Mission Viejo, California. If you're familiar with Mission Viejo, California, it's the suburbs, you know what I mean? And, well, this is how Pat's looking like in high school. Now, I'm a awkward, poopy pants kid, right? Right? That's naturally awkward, poopy pants, weird, awkward guy. But I'm listening to like Eazy-E and N.W.A. and Ice Cube, you know what I'm saying? So I got size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up, you know what I'm saying? I got a 5XL sweatshirt on, you know what I'm saying? I walk with a limp. I drink St. Ives out of a brown paper bag. I pour beer in the curb for the dead homies even, you know what I'm saying? Now, I don't have any dead homies, but I'm getting ready for some, you know what I mean? You know? Right? Like, alcohol gives me power. You know what I'm saying? And when you start living like that, you start having some big friends, you know what I'm saying? Some like real crazy friends. I see a couple of you in the room, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? I got big friends and I got crazy friends. And I'm like a chihuahua, you know what I'm saying? I got a big bark, you know what I mean? But no fight in me, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? I talk a lot and then you want to fight me and I'm like, yeah, get him. And so my friends beat you up, you know what I mean? I'm like, na 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 na, you know, and I give you a little kick or something, you know what I'm saying? I'm a coward. I'm terrified. I want you to like me so bad I'm willing to do whatever it is I think you want me to do. And we're drinking one night, you know what I'm saying? And all my friends, they were hungry, you know what I mean? And I'm a director of the show. I come up with ideas really fast. I said, I got this perfect idea. I said, what we will do is we'll call Domino's Pizza, and then when he brings the pizza, one guy grab the pizza, the other guy hand him leaves for the money, and then we'll just take off running. They're like, that's a great idea. You're going to do it. I said, oh, no, my shoes, you know what I mean? And so I said, you're going to do it, right? And so you guys did it, my friends, and they go do it. And at the time, I had the stun gun. I wasn't like crazy or anything. I would just like zap my friends or mess around, you know. And three guys went. I didn't know why the third guy was going, but he went, you know. And I'm up there watching, you know, the director of the show, making sure everyone's doing it right, you know. And one guy grabbed the pizza, the other guy handed the leaves for the money, and the third guy went, bang, zapped the pizza man, dude, and he went down, you know what I'm saying? And they didn't even get the money, they just got the pizza, you know what I'm saying? And we ate the pizza, and drank the beer, and, you know, and did our deal, and the next day I go to school, and I get a call slip. You know, I don't know if you're a call slip kind of guy, you know, the principal wants to see you. I get a call slip every day, right? What's the call slip talk? Man, you have such potential. Like, if you would just apply yourself, you'd be doing really good, you know? I hear loser, failure, right? I think I'm going to get the potential talk, and there's two sheriffs and a detective, and they want to know about this strong-arm robbery case, you know? Now, I don't want to be a snitch. Now, the truth is, I want you to like me. You know what I'm saying? It ain't about being a snitch. I want you to like me. So I'm like, what are you talking about, strong-arm robbery case? And they're like, well, hey, check it out. We got your name, and we know there was two other people with you. And you need to give us them, and we'll let you go. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. So I got arrested on a crime I didn't even commit. And I went to juvenile hall for 6 months. Right? It doesn't make me an alcoholic, just the consequences of my idiot. Hit me an idiot, you know? And then I was on house arrest, you know what I mean? And for 6 months, my little gang came to see me, and they brought me a 40 and a little joint, you know what I mean? They're like, yeah, right on. You're down. Right? And they had a little needle and thread. They're like, you need to give yourself a tattoo. I want you to like me. So I'm like, all right, what do I got to do? They're like, put this three dots on your ankle or on your elbow, wherever you want it, for your crazy life. So I gave myself three dots on my ankle for my crazy life in Mission Viejo, never been in a fight. Then my friends left, and I'm thinking, man, you never been in a fight, bro. So I plucked off one dot. Now I still have two dots. You know what I mean? And it doesn't make me alcoholic, right? Doesn't make me alcoholic. That's the effect that alcohol gives for me. Powerful. Alcohol has more power in my life than anything else. I have a ninth grade education at this time, right? When I'm 17, ninth grade education. I go to school, but I eat acid in class, you know, they watch the teacher melt, you know. I gotta get change, spare change, you know, from the rich kids so I could drink, you know. I only go to school to get loaded and have friends. And, you know, my mom finds a bag of weed in the house. My mom's like, you can't smoke weed in my house. Now, if you're new, I've learned I have a hearing problem. I didn't know I had a hearing problem, you know what I mean? Because my mom's like, you can't smoke weed in my house, and I heard, you need to hide it better, you know? And so I hide it better, you know what I mean, for a month. And my mom would go speak in Idaho, and I'd steal her truck for the week. My mom would go to Kansas for the weekend, and I'd have a full-on rager at her house, you know what I mean? I'm just, like, wasted all the time. I come out of a blackout, my pants are on my ankles, I'm peeing all over my mom's fish tank, you know? My good AA mom, you know? And I come home one night and the top lock's locked and I'm like, oh man, I'm in trouble. You know what I mean? Like, I know I'm in trouble. You know what I mean? Top lock's never locked. And so I ring the doorbell and my mom comes to the door and she's holding the bag of weed in her hand and she's like, you're kicked out. I walked in my bedroom at 17 and I packed my backpack and I walked by my mom and I looked at her right in the eyes and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. And I watched my mom's heart break right in that moment. Now, I don't know how you deal with shame and guilt, but this alcoholic arrogance puffed out, I puffed my chest, I grabbed my mom by the collar, I slammed her against the wall, F you, I hate you, you're never going to see me again. My mom was my hero, my mom was my best friend, and alcohol told me to put my hands on my mom. My mom that night, she said, you can either stay here and be sober or go out on the streets and get loaded, but you need to make a choice, and alcohol told me that I was kicked out of the house. At 17, I already have alcoholism. Coming in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, not knowing what alcoholism is. If someone would have sat down with me, I could have identified it at 17 years old. But what happened that night at 17, I went to an abandoned house where I was getting loaded at, and I took my first hit of crack cocaine at 17 years old. The disease of alcoholism is progressive. And that's all I'm going to talk about, the progression is that one thing. And it took me until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous until I was 27 years old. Now, I went to treatment when I was 25, right? I went to treatment. I think there's some treatment centers here. I could feel it, you know what I mean? Just that high, high love going on up here and here, you know what I'm saying? I could feel it. You know, it still gets me excited, you know? And, I went to treatment I wasn't allowed to fraternize there, which I thought was kind of rude, you know what I mean? So I had to ask. I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, you're not allowed to fraternize. So I called. I was like, Mom, I need to go to a different treatment center. This isn't going to work, you know? So you stay there. She hung up on me. Now, I can recite chapter 5. I can recite the steps, right? So I'm like a little junior counselor in there, you know what I mean? I'm like, want to do a book study, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I'm in the infirmary 3 days in, and all of a sudden this girl came walking in the infirmary, and I turned around. I was like, bing! Oh my God, we were married, we had kids, we had a little yellow house, white picket fence. I mean, I fell in love like that fast, you know what I mean? And I knew she loved me as much as I loved her, and I'm a rule follower. Really, I want you to like me, but it looks like rule following. And so I write her a note, because that's not talking. And so I hand her a note, and later on that day she hands me a note, and next day I hand her a note, and 28 days later we fell in love. Never even had a conversation. I mean, real love. Like, real love. Like, it's easy to be in recovery if you're in love. You know what I'm saying? I'm, like, doing book studies. I'm like, dude, recovery's awesome. It's so great, you know? And my counselor, Mark, calls me in his office. I'm like, yeah. I said, I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, sir. My life's unmanageable because I can recite the steps. He's like, you're getting it quick, kid, you know? I'm like, I know, you know? I went to go get my note one day, and she didn't give me a note. And I don't know what it's like for you when you're not loved, but I'm like suicidal, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm going to kill myself. I can't do this anymore. You know, my friends are like, what about the book study? I'm like, screw the book study. I'm over it now. I go in my little room. I cry for like 3 days. Woe is me. You know, they're like, you need to go to group. I'm like, I'm not going to group, you know? And one day I went to go. Finally, I was like, okay, I'll go to group. You know, and I go to group, and she's standing there, and she gives me a note. It was like getting hugged by God. I mean, all of a sudden, the clouds part. I was like, yeah, bro, what's up with that book study, dog? You know what I mean? And I ran to my counselor, Mark's office. I said, Mark, I've come to believe there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to sanity, you know? And I truly believed it was God, right? Like, I had no idea it was that note that day. You know what I mean? No, I'm telling you my story in retrospect. You know what I'm saying? And, I think I pissed someone off, you know? And, oh, man. Jeez almighty. My feeling is hurt. And, where was I at? I forgot. And, I ran back to my counselor's office. I said, I come to believe in God, you know? I truly believed it was God. I had no idea it was that note, man. You know what I'm saying? And then the next week, he's like, Pat, you're doing such a good job. You got to do a 9-month program after this. I was like, I thought I was doing a good job. We may have got to do a 9-month program. And so I wrote my God a note, you know what I mean? Like a 9-page, woe is me. Oh my God, these people are so mean. They're bad. I got to do a 9-month program. And she wrote me a note back, and on the top of the note, in all capital letters, highlighted, I have to do a 9-month program too. And I was like, oh my God, this is that God's will that Mark's talking about. You know what I'm saying? And I ran to Mark's office and I said, man, Mark, I'm making a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understand her. You know what I mean? Like, but I truly believed it was God. I had no idea. I was delusional. I really believed it was God. Like, I'm telling you my story in retrospect so I can laugh at it today. Because we can see the humor in it, right? Because we've been there, right? But I didn't know. And I go, where should we go to sober living? She's like, let's go to Hawaii. I'm like, oh my God, romance, this is amazing. Like, dude, the stars are aligning. We have the same sobriety date. You know what I mean? Get the crystals out. Let's do some woo-woo. You know what I mean? What's your favorite incense? You know what I mean? Like, I was like so in love and so on fire for recovery. And I got on the plane to go to Hawaii to be with my sober girlfriend, to live in sober living. Right? Now, I heard about a frontal lobe cortex, and I have a ninth grade education. I don't know what that means. I want you to like me, so I don't answer questions. I just go, yeah, frontal lobe cortex, yeah, medical model. Mm-hmm. And the flight attendant's like, what would you like to drink? I was a heroin addict, so I ordered a Heineken. You know what I mean? 12 or 13 Heinekens later, I land in Hawaii. Now, they didn't talk about it's the first drink that gets you drunk in there. They didn't talk about a phenomenon of craving in there, right? I have a mind, right, sober mind, going to sober living to be with my sober girlfriend that I was truly in love with. My mind's driving me back to the thing that's killing me. And I stood there that day and I thought about it. Sober living or bar? Sober living or bar? All of a sudden there was like 400 people in the bar. They were dancing. They were having a good old time. Sober living was like, sober living. You know what I mean? I was like, here I am thinking I'm making a choice. Not knowing that when I put alcohol into my body, I lost the power of choice. Same spot I was at 17 when mom said, stay here and be sober. Go out on the streets and get loaded. Same spot my mom was at in that courtroom. AA or 10 years in prison, right? I stood there that day thinking I'm making a choice. And I walked into the bar and I ordered another drink and there wasn't anyone dancing or nothing, you know what I mean? And I'd go in and out of AA identifying as an addict. My mom found Al-Anon, right? If you're new and your loved one finds the Al-Anon, the gig's up, you know what I mean? Because the money stops coming, you know what I mean? I mean, I taught my mom how to Western Union. My mom wired me $150 every week for 10 years. And then she got into Al-Anon, you know what I mean? And I'd go, right, can you send me the money? And she'd say, no. And I'm like, no. She's like, no's a full sentence, you know? And I'm like, oh. She'd hang up on me, you know what I'm saying? And so I'd call her back and go, Mom, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation. And I hit that guilt button and she'd go, wire me the money. So then I'd call her back and I'd say, can I have some money? And she would say, I'm going to set a boundary. Oh, God, boundary. You know? I'm a bulldozer, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, well, if you wouldn't have kicked me out of here, I wouldn't have the house. I wouldn't be in this situation. It's all your fault. She'd wire me the money. And I would call my mom and tell her how much I loved her, and she was my hero, and she'd wire me the money. And so what happened was my girlfriend ended up overdosing and dying and never making it to Hawaii. And I asked my mom to get me back to the mainland, and the last year and a half of my drinking was downtown L.A. on Skid Row. And when I got here, I hadn't showered in 6 months. I had two shoes, only one had a soul. I saw the devil and his troops. They followed me wherever I went. I stood in the corner of 6th and Los Angeles. I thought I was an antenna communicating with the aliens. You know what I mean? Getting important information from normal people. I was channeling. Right? The only way to get the visuals, the hallucination of the devil away from me, I had a beach cruiser. And I had two sticks about this long, and I twined them together like the cross, and I stuck them in the handlebars of my bike, and I cruised around Skid Row like that. Absolutely crazy. And on the 23rd of October, I came to in a motel, sexually assaulted for the 12th time by a gay man as a straight man. And I was full of shame, and I was full of guilt, and I hated myself. I was terrified, and I was alone. And I didn't know if it was 6 in the morning, if it was 6 at night. I knew that if I got a pint of tequila, everything would be all right. And I walked down to the liquor store, and us were there because it was 5:30 in the morning, and we were walking in a circle waiting for the liquor store to open. And it was the longest 30 minutes of my life. And that voice got louder, and it was screaming, and it was yelling, and the anxiety intensified, right? And I was just going to snap. And right as I'm about to snap, the lady at the liquor store opened the door to let us in. And I got that sense of ease and comfort that came at once. just knowing that the liquor store is open to get that pint of tequila. And I went in there and I got that pint of tequila and I took the cap off and I threw the cap because who needs the cap? And I put half that tequila back. And I got that sense of ease and comfort that all alcohol always gave me. I sat on that wall and I sat back and I took a big deep breath. I exhaled for the first time. Not knowing that it was the first drink that got me drunk because the next thought told me it was okay to drink that second half of that bottle. I put that second half of that bottle back and I blacked out. And 20 minutes later, I was at that motel begging my way into the same motel I just told myself I wasn't going to go back to. And I blacked out for 3 days. And I came to on the third day, on the 23rd of October, which is my sobriety date, I came to on the 23rd of October prostituting myself one more day for one more hit. And it wasn't a bottom. 3 days before would have been more of a bottom that day. But what happened for me was I had a spiritual defense that walked right in between me and the first thought of that first drink. And that spiritual defense said, call your mom and ask for help. And I picked up the phone and I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need help. Now, I didn't believe in God until I was 10 years sober. But I know that God heard that little prayer, Mom, I need help. There was no plan attached to that help. There was no mom I need help with. It was I need help with no explanation. And my mom said, I'll send somebody right now. She's like, if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. And she hung up on me. And my mom tried to call every high profile old timer in Alcoholics Anonymous to help her son, and not one of them answered. And the guy that answered had a year of sobriety. And you know the guy that has a year of sobriety? He's on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? Man, he had just got a call from his doctor that he had 4-stage cancer and he had 6 months to live. And the next call that he got was a call from my mom saying, I need help with my son. And he knew that if he didn't treat his alcoholism right, he would have been drunk. And he would have died before he made it to that 6 months. And he said, where's the kid at? He didn't say, have the kid call me. He said, where is he at? He went and grabbed a new guy, right? Because that's what we do. We go grab a new guy. We don't do 12-step calls alone. He went and grabbed a new guy. And they went to that motel that day. And I sat on the edge of the bed, 98 pounds, shaking violently. And that guy came in the door. He was like, my name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa. And the other guy was on a walker. He's like, my name's John. I got 90 days sober. You know what I mean? I'm like, good for you, old man. You're older than dirt. You know what I'm saying? Here I am judging the good folks that came for fun and for free. Right? Because if I let you in, you're going to hurt me like everyone else has hurt me my whole life. And I know tonight that when I called and asked for help, I walked into God's grace. Because that guy Jack said, come with me, kid. And I got off the bed that day and I followed that guy to that motel. And he said, just get in the van. And I didn't ask where we were going. I just got in the van. And if you're new, just get in the car and come with us. And I got in the van and those guys told me their story. And I didn't identify their story, man. They had wives. They lost businesses. They lost kids. And I'm over here going, I never had a wife. I never had kids. I never had those things, right? And I'm separating from the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And before he knew it, I ended up at this place called Charlie Street. It was a low-bottom indigent detox, 10 days for free, right? No cute therapist, no Suboxone, no meds, you know what I mean? Sit the F down, shut up, we don't want what you have kind of recovery, you know what I mean? And I sat on the couch, I hadn't showered in 6 months, and I thought, man, these guys need to clean these couches, they smell like pee, you know? And Jack said, hey, Pete, come on over. And this guy, Pete, came over. And Pete was tattooed from head to toe, man. And Pete came over. He goes, my name is Pete, and I'm an alcoholic. I can't. And Jack goes, hey, Pete, when you drink, what happens to you? And Pete started telling me his story. And Pete talked about every time he drank, he went to jail. And I perked up. And Jack goes, when's the only time you can stop drinking? I said, the only time I stop drinking is when I'm in jail. And Pete said, me too. And so Pete started telling me all these stories about drinking and getting out of jail and drinking and going back to jail. And I started to say, look at the way I drink. Every time I go to jail, right? It's the only time I could stop. And Jack started talking about the thinking that preceded his first drink. And he says, what happens when you're in jail? I go, my mom comes and sees me. I make a promise to my mom not going to drink. H&I comes. Thanks for making the H&I announcement. H&I came. And I would sit in your meeting and I would get that sense of hope. And I would think, man, when I get out of here, I'm going to go sit with you guys. And if you do H&I, thank you because you brought the message to me in that jail. And then I would go to church, right? I mean, I didn't, they were like, you know, if you want to give your life to Jesus, come on up. I was like, I ain't doing that. That's stupid. I felt like this thing lift me off the chair. I was like floating up there, man. I even got on the knees. I gave my life to Jesus in jail, man. I wanted to be sober more than anything else. He said, really? I said, yeah. You know, all of a sudden they go, Ochoa, roll it up. You know what I mean? So I roll it up. I give all the homies the commissary. I go sit in the holding tank waiting to run it. Got any warrants? You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, we don't have a warrant Riverside, you know? And right before I get out, I start talking to myself. I was like, well, I'm not crazy, Jack. I go, the guys that talk to themselves are on Skid Row. He's like, well, yeah, but what does the conversation say? I said, the conversation always starts by saying, alcohol's not your problem, Pat. And I get out of jail and I call for my ride and I get a 12-pack of beer and I put one beer down. Shame, guilt, remorse goes away. In the middle of the second beer, I wonder what they're doing down the street. And I take a walk down the street. I meet a new friend. All of a sudden, we're business partners. Next thing you know, I'm back in jail. He said, you're back in jail? He said, yeah, H and I promised my mom, gave my life to Jesus. Going to be sober the rest of my life. An hour before I get out, Ochoa, roll it up, give the homies commissary, sitting there. And I start having a conversation with myself. He said, what did the conversation say? I said, you know what? Meth is your problem. Alcohol's not your problem. Heroin's your problem, right? All these drugs. My mind always drives me back to alcohol. He said, really? I said, yeah. And I get out of jail that time. And I drank the beer, waiting for a ride. Before you know it, I'm down the street. Now I'm in a motel solving the world's problems for 7 days, you know. And I was arrested butt naked. He said, you were too. So was I, you know. And man, what happened was there some identification starting to happen. He was armed with facts about himself as it related here. He talked about the physical allergy, that putting alcohol in his body, he couldn't stop until he was in jail. And more importantly, he had a sober mind driving him back to the thing that was going to kill him. And he looked at me and he said, if you can concede both of those things, he said, you might be alcoholic. And I'm so grateful that he left me with me. He left me with you might be. There was no argument in that. And I looked at Jack and I said, Jack, I'm alcoholic. The guy lit up like a chandelier. He's like, I got a new guy. You know what I mean? He was so excited, man. He was just like on fire. He's like, oh, yeah. He was a big circle and triangle kind of guy. You know what I mean? He would take me to every meeting, 3 meetings a day, made me meet 5 people, made me get there. There was no suggestion. This is what you're going to do. I have to meet 5 people and I have to get 5 numbers. And then the next day I would have to call you, you know? And he'd go, how many did you call? I go, 3. He goes, oh, 7 calls today, you know? And he'd hold me accountable, man. And then he told me, he's like, you're going to get a commitment. I was like, I don't want a commitment, you know. And he'd make me be the greeter, you know, and have to stand there. My name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know shit, you know. And you guys would laugh, you know. You know, but what happened was I got in the middle of you. I got in the middle of you. I didn't want to get in the middle of you, but I got in the middle of you. And, man, I started to see you guys were going bowling after the meeting. You're going fellowshipping, you know. And I was like, you didn't invite me, which I got pretty pissed off about, you know. I didn't want to go bowling anyways, but I still was mad, you know. And I remember looking at my sponsor. I was like, why do I got to be a service? These guys are having fun, you know. He looked at me and he said, son, he said, your whole life you've been a taker. He said, what we're going to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous is turn you into a giver. I had no idea, man, what that meant. You know, I don't want to be a giver. I'm a taker, you know. And I started to go through the steps, man. Day 4, I was already making amends. Here's the deal. I identified I was an alcoholic. He said, do you believe in God? I said, dude, I don't believe in God. Never going to believe in God. I ain't selling your literature on the corner. I'm not going to sell little Bill and Bob statues places. I'm not doing it, you know? And he switched the conversation and he said, when I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I walked my daughter down the aisle, I had joy for my daughter. When I watched my grandson hit his first baseball, I was happy for him. He said, today I fit in my earth suit. And I was like, how did he know about the earth suit? But what happened was he gave me hope. He gave me hope that if I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I too could have joy for another person. That I too could be happy for another person. That I too would fit in my earth suit if I did what he did. Right? He'd go, just do what I do. I go, well, what is it that I do? He goes, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. Huh? He said, just get in the car, kid. And I get in the car, right? And he was big on this deal, man. I was first day, 4 days sober, man. I had to make amends to the police department. I had a warrant. That's why. And I wasn't like excited about it. You know, he's like, you're going to turn yourself in. Everything's going to be all right. You know, you're an AA now. God's working in your life, you know. So he puts me in a suit like this. And we show up to the court. And the judge goes, Mr. Ochoa. I said, yes, sir. He goes, come on up. And so I stand there and he goes, do you remember the last time you were in my courtroom? I said, yes, sir. He said, do you remember what I told you? I said, yes, sir. He said, you remember that if I saw you in my courtroom again, I was going to sentence you to 3.5 years in prison? I said, yes, sir. He goes, I wasn't lying. Guard came, cuffed me up, took me downstairs, and I'm talking to myself, man, why'd you trust that guy? He said, you're doing AA, God's working in your life, everything's going to be all right, and another man has failed you. And I got on my knees, and I prayed to a God I didn't believe in. Man, just get me out of this one, please. 4:30 in the afternoon, I'm getting shackled up to the guy next to me to get on the bus. And as I'm getting on the bus, the guard says, I don't know what's going on, but the judge wants to see you one more time. And he uncuffed me, and I went up to see the judge, and the judge looks at me and goes, I don't know why I'm doing this, but he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's been sitting here all day fighting for you to get out. And there's a bed available for you at the Salvation Army. He said, but you're going directly from here, no stops in between, to the Salvation Army. I said, yes, sir, I'm going to do whatever you want, you know. And I get up to the Salvation Army, and what happened was my sponsor called the Salvation Army number nonstop until someone answered. And the guy that answered was a guy that got sober. He had become a drug and alcohol counselor. He had to print some papers. He wasn't even supposed to be in the room. The phone rang, and he wasn't supposed to answer it, but God told him to answer it, and he answered it. My sponsor said, I got this guy, Pat Ochoa, who needs a room. And it was a guy by the name of Tim Pappas, and Tim Pappas was a guy I used to get loaded with. And see, God was working in my life, though I couldn't see God working in my life. And I went to the Salvation Army, man, and I caught fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell in love with AA. I told you my deep, dark secret already, but I couldn't tell that to another man. I gave him a little bit of truth, you know what I mean? He looked at me sideways like that, you know, and I think I'm not going any farther. And a year of sobriety, I had a brother, a sobriety brother, came up to me and said, oh yeah, Jack was telling me that you have experience doing this. Now his intention was pure, but he had just told my secret to another man. And I went without a sponsor. Well, I had a sponsor, but I didn't have a sponsor because I didn't use him. But I was on fire for AA, and I was ingrained in the service, man, and I did Acupaw, and I did Ikipaw, and I was on Ikipaw in LA as the outreach chair. I was the chair of Acupaw at the same time. You know, that's how obsessed I was, crazy, right? And I couldn't get honest with another human being, and I didn't believe in God. And I was in the middle, like, just popular guys speaking on YPOG crazy. And I met a girl, and she got pregnant, and I cheated on her with her friend. And then I got in another relationship with another girl, and I cheated on her. And I got another relationship, and I cheated on her. And I wasn't proud of my behavior. I would go home every night and want to put a bullet in my mouth. There's a line in here that says, when the imperious urge arises, please help another alcoholic, right? And so I had like 55 sponsees, man. I made sure they did everything I wanted them to do. You know what I mean? Just like obsessed crazy. And at 8.5 years of sobriety, I couldn't deal to take it no more. And one more relationship broke. And I was driving my car 100 miles an hour down the road, going to barrel my car in oncoming traffic. And I told myself, when the car gets to be 100 miles an hour, I'm driving in. It was 98, and I looked, and there was enough cars on the other side of the road, and I went to barrel my car into oncoming traffic, and I heard a voice in the back seat that said, call that guy Jonathan from your Tuesday night meeting before you kill yourself. And I picked up the phone. I called this guy. It was midnight. He was 55 years old. He was laying in bed with his beautiful wife, two kids sleeping in the room next door, and he answered the phone in one ring. I said, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to do it. And he said, I want you to meet me at Denny's. And I said, I'll meet you there. And he goes, no, I'm going to stay on the phone until you get there. Because he knew I wasn't going to show up. I walked into Denny's and he opened the book to page 52. And he said, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. He looked at me and he said, what you think is a broken relationship? He said, what you're suffering from is untreated alcoholism. And he asked me, he looked at me and he said, at 17 years sober, I was going to put a bullet in my mouth. And I had a voice that told me that I needed to call a man by the name of Luther Wood. And Luther Wood was suicidal. Luther Wood had a voice that told him to reach out to a man by the name of Clint Hodges. And Clint Hodges was suicidal and reached out to a man by the name of Don Pritz. And in that line of sponsorship, right, I had hope. In that line of sponsorship, I came to believe in that moment that I was not alone. In that line of sponsorship, I came to believe that my situation wasn't different. And we don't talk about that stuff here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We come to AA, we get good, and everything's great. Amen. See you guys later, and go home and want to kill ourselves. And I went back to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with that guy. And for a year and a half, I was suicidal in the rooms. I've talked about two taboo things we don't talk about here. I didn't believe in God, and I wanted to kill myself. And I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had to look at my prejudices that separated me from God. I couldn't stand religion. I couldn't stand the hypocrisy, right? And I had to separate myself from those. And I had to ask myself deep down within what I believed. I could tell you why I didn't believe, but if you asked me what I did believe, I couldn't tell you. And what happened for me was I came to believe that God was love. I came to believe that God was this intuition within inside me that always guided me to do the right thing, and I could never do it. Because I was driven by these old ideas, but didn't know what the old ideas were. The book says we have to let go of the old ideas. The result is nil until we let go absolutely. But what are they? I didn't know. And I had to write a list of the things that were blocking me from God. And there was one thing on the list, and that there was seven things on the list, but the one thing on there was what you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous thought of me. Because I came to believe in you, I wanted you to like me, and if I did enough service work around here, you would like me, you would trust me, and you would think that I could be some good around here. And I said, God, please take away these things that stand in the way of me having a better relationship with you. And for a month, for about 5.5 weeks, I sat and I cried and I screamed at God and I screamed at God and I couldn't let go of this one thing. And in the middle of the night, I said to myself, I said, a relationship with God, which is love, is more important than anything in my life. And I called my sponsor. I said, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. And he got so excited, man. And he said to me on the other end of the line, he said, in the last analysis, which is in the We Agnostics, in the last analysis, that's where God is found. When I was completely at the most loneliest place I'd ever been, by myself, me and God. And I made a decision in that moment to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understood it, which was love. And I did an inventory with that guy, and I got honest, and I got honest with prostituting myself and being sexually assaulted 12 times with that guy. I talked about making stories up in Alcoholics Anonymous so you guys would like me. I told him all of it, right? And he wrote down this list of old ideas, and he handed it to me. And in 7, I wrote a list of new ideas. I said, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I don't have to judge if it's good or bad anymore. Here's all of me. Leave me with what I need to be of service to you and my fellows. And I sat down with every single woman that would, there's two that wouldn't give me the time or day. And I'd sit down and get honest about my behavior. And I would say, here's the harm that I've caused. Is there any harm that I'm unaware of? And I'd have to sit and listen. And this girl looked at me square in the eyes. And she said to me, every guy that I've dated has paid the price because of your behavior, because I don't trust another human being. Dude, I just lost it. For the first time in my life, I got present to the real harm and hurt that I caused another human being. I said, what can I do to make this right? Is there any way that you need to tell me how you feel? And she laid it in. Dude, I was like, oh. I said, what can I do to make it right? She said, I don't ever want you to treat another human being like that ever again and stay the F away from me. Amen. And I'd call my sponsor on the bridge. I'm going to jump off. I can't do it. And he would say, son, I understand when you talked about your sponsor like a maternal figure. My sponsor became a parental figure in my life. I never had a father, and he became a parental figure. And I call him. I said, I'm going to jump off this bridge. I can't do it. Or off this cliff. I can't do it. And he'd say, son, he said, I love you like my own son. He said, will you meet me at the meeting tomorrow before you kill yourself? I'd like to say goodbye to you. And I'd show up the next day to go see my sponsor to say goodbye to him. And I'd feel a little bit better. And he'd say, I'd like to see you tomorrow at the meeting so I could say goodbye to you. And we did this dance for, like, I don't know, 9 months, a year or something. Every day he would say, how's it amends to your dad coming along? And I said, I'm not going to make it. And I'd go home and want to kill myself. And he'd say, how's it amends to your dad coming? And I said, I'm not going to make it. And I'd go home and want to kill myself. Well, finally, 9 months in, I realized, don't call the sponsor, man. He's going to tell you to meet him at the meeting. You know what I mean? You can't kill yourself. You know what I mean? So I pull my car over on the bridge, the 57 bridge. It goes over the 5. And I went from the first time in my life, I went from human dependence to a God dependence. And I said, God, I said, you have 10 seconds. Because I'm not calling that sponsor. And I'm jumping off this bridge. And I got out of my car and I walked to the headlight of the driver's side. And my phone rang. And I looked and it was an unknown number, which I don't answer. But I answered it that day. And I said, hello. And this kid said, Pat. I said, yeah. He goes, my name is Chris. And I wanted to call and thank you because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you saved my life. He said, but I'm just calling you because I'm leaving Alcoholics Anonymous and I want to just tell you that I'm leaving and I'm going to say goodbye. And I had this intuitive thought that I come to believe in too. God was telling me. I looked at my phone. It was 7 o'clock. I said, Chris, there's a meeting starting at the Canyon Club at 7:30. You want to meet me there? I said, I'd like to say goodbye to you before you kill yourself. And I got in my car and I drove 30 miles south to the Canyon Club, which is an Alano Club in Laguna Beach. And I walked into the Alano Club and there's Chris. And Chris is crying. And Chris gives me a big hug and thanks him for saving his life. And then Chris said, will you be my sponsor? And I said, yes, I'd love to be your sponsor. No, I didn't tell him I was about to kill myself. You know what I mean? I just said, absolutely, love to be your sponsor. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know how God answers your prayers. But God always answers my prayers by putting a new man in my life. And I went home that night and I started cussing out God, F you, why do I put another new man in my life? I want to kill myself. I'm over it, right? And I felt a hand on my shoulder push me off of the couch and I was in the fetal position. And I had no other choice but to make amends to a man I never met. I don't have a part in that relationship. My mom got pregnant in a blackout. But where had I been selfish and self-centered and self-seeking? Remember that little boy on the baseball field that looked at his mom and said, if I only had a dad, that would never happen? I carried that old idea into Alcoholics Anonymous until I was 10 years sober. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be a friend to you. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be a boyfriend to you. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to show up for work. If I only had a dad, right? And what happened on the floor of my apartment by myself with me and God, the victim was pulled out of me and the power of love, which was God, went deep down with me. And I got off the floor that night and went to my bedroom and I passed out just like that. The 9-step promises are beautiful, but my favorite promise is in the 10th step. And it says, at this point, we have entered the world of the Spirit. I had entered the world of the Spirit, which is God, which is within me. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I get honest with you, there's some vulnerability that happens. When the vulnerability happens, it touches the God in you. It touches the vulnerability in you and we have a connection. The disease of alcoholism is a disease of isolation and loneliness. The process of recovery is about connection. And I am so grateful to be connected in this moment with you. I'm going to end with this because my mom, anyways, here it is. Every Monday night, I would go see my mom for dinner. I would have to drive my car an hour in rush hour traffic to get my kid to drive an hour in rush hour traffic to have 45 minutes with her for her to bark at me for biting my nails. Everyone in AA loved my mom, but it was like hugging a damn cactus for me. You know what I mean? It was the coldest car ride of my life going home after a meeting, after my mom would be a light in your life. It was the coldest car ride. It was hard for me when I was a kid, my whole life, even as an adult. And I remember talking to my friend Michelle. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I've done my living amends. I'm over it. You know what I mean? And she looked at me and she said, Pat, she said, you're going to have to teach your mom how to love you. I'm like, what do you mean? My mom's 38 years sober. You know what I mean? I'm 37. You know what I mean? She should know how to love me. It's not like a teacher in AA, you know. And she said, you're going to have to teach her how to love you. I said, all right, you know, and I would grab my mom and I would kiss her on the forehead and I'd love on her because I'm touchy and sensitive, you know. And she'd get all awkward, and it was just weird. It was so hard. And we were going, my mom had COPD. She was on oxygen. She couldn't breathe, you know what I mean? Like, and we went to Tennessee to go speak together, and we were walking through the airport, and she's like, I'm like, Mom, just get in the wheelchair. Just get in the wheelchair. It's all right. And she's like, I'm not getting in that wheelchair. You know what I mean? And I'm like, Mom, just get in the wheelchair. I'm not getting in that wheelchair. And I looked at her, and I said, Mom, when are you going to let me love you? And my mom sat in the wheelchair. Man, I was so proud. Man, I was walking with my mom like, yeah, you know, I'm so proud. And all of a sudden, I got an alcoholic idea, and I noticed that the thing was going downhill. And all of a sudden, I started running with my mom, and she's yelling, yeah, stop, stop. And I kicked my feet up in the air, and we were going, wah, like this, you know what I mean? And we got to the bottom of the hill, and she's, I can't believe you. And I was laughing, and, you know. And I get to the hotel that night, and we go to sleep, and I wake up in the morning, and I turn the shower on, and all this red water comes out, you know. She had snuck in the bathroom and put a red dye tablet in the showerhead. Dang, dude. I come out of the shower. She's like, got him, you know. But what happened was our relationship shifted from an authority figure to a childlike relationship. For the next 3 years, me and my mom had a childlike relationship. And went to the home group on a Wednesday night. It used to be an 8 o'clock meeting. We'd get there at 6. She'd be there at 4:30 to make sure everyone was setting up right. No control issues there, you know. And she'd pass the baskets to the first 6 rows where my sponsees sit. All the cute boys, right? She'd go, oh, you have the cutest sponsees in AA, you know. And then she would go, Pat, they don't have money. She'd shame them, and then she'd flirt with them. And then the next week they go, Patio, I got the money, you know. And they put it in the basket, and the speaker spoke, and we went home, and she called me to complain about the speaker, like she always did. And that night, she went home and couldn't breathe. And we had to rush her to the emergency room. And she got to the emergency room, and my mom had a tumor that blocked the passageway. And they cored out the tumor, and they diagnosed her with lung cancer. And they put her on hospice, and she goes, I'm only going on hospice to get off hospice. Don't worry about me, you know. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, she's back at Starbucks reading the book, back at the home group, you know, 4:30, controlling everyone, flirting with the kids, shaming them, getting the money, you know, speaker spoke. On the way home, she's on her way home, called me to complain about the speaker like she always did. And that night, she couldn't breathe, and she sat in her bed from 11 p.m. to 7 in the morning, not being able to breathe because she knew it was the end. We rushed her to the hospital, and the tumor had grown back that fast. And I knew it was the end. And I would go see her in the hospice. And she'd say, don't sit here and watch me die. She said, go out there and live your life. She said, but please come back tomorrow and give me a kiss, will you? And I'd go see my mom, and I'd give her a kiss, and I'd tell her I love her, and I'd tell her I'll be back tomorrow to see you. And I'd leave, and it was the hardest thing. I came to AA and hear you guys share all the time. The greatest gift that AA gave you was you were there when your loved one took their last breath. And I want your experience so bad, but I don't want to walk through my own experience. And if I could just do what you do, then I'll get what you get, right? That's not my experience. I have to walk through my own. And I'm going to speak at Wacky Pond, Idaho, and I don't want to go because I don't want to miss my mom's last breath. I know she's going to die when I'm gone, right? And so I pray, and I'm like, God, what do you want me to do? And God says, you need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, when I made amends to my mom and I asked her what I can do to make it right, all my mom said to me is, I want you to get in the middle of AA and help as many people as you can. Now, my sponsor made me pay the money, but that's what she wanted. And I hear God tell me to go be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't like that answer, so I pray the next day. And I hear the same answer, be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like that answer, so I pray 3 days in a row. I get the same answer. Then I call my sponsor. I go, what do I do? He goes, what did God tell you to do? I said, God told me to get in the middle of AA and go help be a service to AA. He said, well, I guess that's what you got to go do. Go be a service to Wacky Paw. I said, all right. So I get on the plane. I fly to Wacky Paw in Idaho. And I'm speaking Saturday night. And Saturday at 11 in the morning, I get a call from my friend that says, your mom has been unresponsive for 3 days. And she hasn't communicated in 3 days. And you need to hurry. You need to get back tonight because your mom needs to say goodbye to you before she goes. And I got on my knees and I prayed to God and I said, God, what do you want me to do? And the message that came to me was that you need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went and I gave a talk that night, and I went to sleep that night, and I woke up the next day and I flew home. And I drove like 90 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour into my mom's hospice room, and I walked in the door, and my mom sat straight up like this, and she put her arms out like that.
Right.
Spirit felt spirit walk into the room that day. If I wouldn't have made amends to my dad, to the point where I entered the world of the Spirit, I'd have missed the moment. And I walked in, and my mom held on to me, and she said, "Pato, I want you to know you did the right thing." She said, "I love you, I love you, I love you." And that was the last words that my mom said. And the next day my mom died and my heart broke. But what happened for me in that moment was that there was a level of forgiveness that was so profound. All my mom wanted me to do was to get in the middle of AA and help as many people as she could, as I could. And I honored her amends until the day that my mom died. Thank God for strong sponsorship. Thank God for good friends that hold me accountable. Thank God for showing up to Alcoholics Anonymous to be a service. Thank God for saying yes, because that's where God wants me to be. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, my message tonight is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. And it's my prayer every night that if you're new, you find a sponsor that cares more about your life than the way you feel. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic, and I love you all. Thanks.